I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Marissa, how are you?
Good morning. I am great. How are you?
I am terrific, and we are recording early.
Yes, a very early morning for us.
It some might call, well, not really.
Not really, for me.
Somebody one time said that this is like Oh Dark Hundred, but at least the nice part about the summer is it's not dark this early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was when I got up, but that's okay.
No,
a lot of times it's dark when I get up.
It's actually nice. You know, I always do love it when I wake up this early and get my day going this early. It's not that I have to wake up incredibly early, but it's that I started my day earlier. And I had to take a walk out to the mailbox to put something in there. And
beautiful.
It was so nice.
Yep.
So nice and quiet. It is.
I'm one of those people, I love early morning. I just don't like the first minute of early morning when
I
get up.
Me too. It takes me a few
minutes.
Once
I'm up, I'm great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, how was the wedding?
It was really nice. It was
Did you melt
hot.
Like a butter? I was going to say, did you melt like a butter sculpture?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think I handled it pretty well. I was well prepared since I don't have air conditioning at my house. So I'm kind of used to the heat. So I think I managed. The poor groomsmen, they were all pretty hot in their suits. But it all was great. It could have stormed, and so it didn't do that. And so we were able to have the ceremony outside and do photos outside. And then actually, I think it was right as we were going from the cocktail hour to the reception, it started downpouring. But we were already inside at that point. So,
good.
Yes, my
that's good.
It all worked out. It was great.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I was thinking about you because I got home from Virginia that afternoon, I'm thinking, and I was out cutting my grass. It is so unbelievably hot.
Yeah.
But
we just kept drinking water, lots and lots and lots of water.
Just keep drinking water, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So today's post that I put out there is probably going to be really confusing for people that are younger than me because it was titled Slide Rules, Genius, and Guts.
I had to do some Googling.
So when you did some Googling on slide rules, and this was not the rules that you use on a slide at a park, mm-hmm. what did you find when you looked up slide rules?
I mean, I'm still not entirely sure, but it does look
this?
Like a, it looks like a ruler, except with a lot more numbers on it and a little thing that slides across. And
you got it.
I would not know how to use it, but I understand that you had to use one.
I did.
I'm dating you.
That's fine. Yeah.
That you had to use one in high school, right?
I did. I had to. So when I was taking a mechanical drawing class in high school, I think the first time I had to use a slide rule was probably 1978. Even though there were calculators, you know, the Texas Instruments had these funny little things like a TI-30 or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no lie, these calculators had like a belt clip.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
So you could clip it on your belt, you know. So all the nerds like me had a TI-30 clip to our belt kind of thing. But anyways, in drafting class, my drafting teacher told us that we had to learn to use a slide rule. And it was used to do calculations. It was a calculator. And you lined up certain numbers, and so if I had one in front of me today, I would know what it is, but I don't think, I'm certain I wouldn't remember how to use it unless I looked it up somewhere. But my reason for saying slide rules, genius, and guts was this past week was the anniversary of the landing on the moon and the first walk on the moon when Neil Armstrong had his, you know, famous words, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And if you think about, and so I watched a podcast, listened to a podcast, and then there's also a YouTube of the podcast. And I'll put those notes in there'll be a link in our show notes. But it brought me back to what it was like to grow up during the Apollo years. And if we think about it, so back in the early 60s, I think it was 1962, if I got it right, I don't remember exactly, but President Kennedy challenges America, and these were his words, "We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is the one that are willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and others too." So the reason why this happened, in the late 50s, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, which was the first satellite. The Cold War was well underway. We were already in the nuclear age. Americans were really fearful that the Soviets were getting a leg up on us on that, in that space war type of thing, which clearly they were. And there was this challenge issued to the American people that we will put a man on the moon by the end of the decade. And if we think about it, in 8 years, we went from not knowing how to do it to having Neil Armstrong walk on the moon. And that's incredible. And so in my post, I put this: imagine traveling 238,900 miles, unfolding a landing vehicle, separating it from the command module, picking up samples, re-entering the landing vehicle, launching it off the surface of the moon, reconnecting with the command module, and returning home with a computer on board that only had 36K of memory and a megahertz processor, a single megahertz processor. There were, you know, today we could say, well, you know, our smartphones have more technology, more computing power than Mission Control, excuse me, in Houston. That's, you know, and our smartphone. Mm-hmm. We can, and so think, when I talked, before we started recording, I talked about, you know, that these engineers were calculating angularity of launch on slide rules, where if you're off by the slightest fraction of a degree, we're talking like 10,000ths of a degree, you miss the moon. They did it with slide rules. Nobody knew what this was going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew exactly what the moon was like. Was the surface of the moon this fluffy flower type of stuff that, flour meaning, you know, ground flour that you bake with, because mm-hmm. that was really, it was similar what it was like. How deep was that? Would they get sucked into the moon's surface? Nobody knew. Now, they sent probes to see how thick they thought it was, but there was really nobody knew for sure.
Right.
You know, and so if we think about from 1962 by 1969, less than, you know, 8 months, 8 years around there, we go from not knowing how we're going to get there to landing and walking on the moon. And then very shortly after that, we're driving a car on the moon. There was the moon rover. So my mm-hmm. son Tim, engineer Tim, texted me last night and he said, you know, do you remember the lunar landing and Neil Armstrong? And I don't remember watching it on TV. I'm starting to think that I might have been in a car with my dad and my brother, because, you know, people that listen know, and those that know me know that real well, that I'm a person of faith. And I remember my dad saying to my brother and I, my dad didn't think that we could make it to the moon. And he quoted a scripture verse that said, and God has set the boundaries of man, whatever it might be. And I don't know it as well as he did. And my brother, and I remember this really from a story my dad saying more than actually being there, but when we're listening on the radio to Neil Armstrong taking these first steps, my brother, who's older than me, looks at my dad and says, "So now what, Dad?" You know, my dad was using the Bible to say we'd never get to the moon, mm-hmm. and Neil Armstrong walked on it. And my dad just said, "Well, I guess that's a verse I don't really understand," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember listening to that. But I do remember watching on NBC when we drove the lunar rover, when astronauts drove the lunar rover around. You know, and you kind of wonder, like, why did they do that? Well, because they could.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a point of, we can do this. And the key to this, and the reason why I wrote it, was two things. The process of getting to the moon was iterative. What I mean by that is we knew what the goal was: go to the moon. We didn't know how to get there. And when you have this outstanding, amazing goal, you don't need to know how you're going to do that. You need to know how to do the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they did. They knew the next thing. And they discovered the next thing. And they kept working on what was the next thing. And we all have these challenges. They're all around us. Before we started recording, I talked about, you know, maybe it's finding a way to end poverty in a certain area of our city here. It's a challenge of, you know, how do we find a cure for a disease? How do we, as an organization, how do we reach out to a new customer market or what is our next product? Schools, how do we change the way we evaluate kids or how do we reach all the kids? And there might be, and faith communities, how do we do this or that? There, we all need to have these amazing, there was one phrase, a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal. We need something like that. Now, we don't need to know exactly all the steps to get there. We just need to know the next thing. And I think as I got older, I lost the guts. So maybe I had the slide rule. Maybe to some degree I had a little bit of the genius, but I lose the guts.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't, and when we lose the guts, we'll never achieve what we need to achieve. And that's that to me was this big lesson from the Apollo thing was, you know, hey, what is really why were they able to do it? Why were they able to do these amazing things? Well, because they used the iterative process. They had a goal that was inspiring them. And people say, well, what was such an inspiration? Well, fear to some degree of what could happen if the Soviet Union had a leg up on us in the space race, because they could deliver the nuclear bombs via intercontinental ballistic missiles. And, you know, we had to get there first kind of thing. For our own protection. So those are kind of the learnings that I picked up out of this. So one of the questions that I had for you is, you know, what are some of the thoughts that your generation has? Like, I've actually heard people say that some people believe that we never went to the moon,
mm-hmm.
that it was all created by Hollywood or something. You know, from someone that's my children's age, what are your thoughts about this?
I think this is one of those things that I maybe like took for granted not growing mm-hmm. up during the time when it all occurred. Like I knew that we landed on the moon and I had a general sense, and then reading through your notes, I learned a lot more. I've never doubted that, you know, that it's happened, you know, that it happened. Or
well, that's good.
Yeah. So, but I have heard that, you know, I actually know someone who is from your generation who has told me it never happened.
Really?
Which really surprised me.
Wow.
Because he did the whole thing. Oh, it's in Hollywood. It's in a studio and blah, blah, blah.
Was he smoking a lot of stuff in the 60s and 70s? I'm just kidding.
I don't know, but I'm not really sure about that. But I think it's, you know, reading through the whole process and how it all unfolded, it truly is inspiring to think about, yeah. You know, have we lost some of that guts, like yes. you mentioned, and we have this tendency to, I think, just get really comfortable with
right.
what we know and, you know, maybe what our businesses are doing or what our family goals are, whatever. But we become a little complacent because we're comfortable and, you know,
right.
why mess it up now or why risk
right.
it? And, you know, you can certainly have all the calculations and you can have the brains, but if you don't have that little bit of risk taking in you.
Yes.
What are you missing out on?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. You know, as a kid, I didn't realize the risk. You know, we did have Apollo 1. We lost three astronauts,
mm-hmm.
Grissom, White, and Chafee, and we lost them on the launch pad. They were just doing some testing. when a fire broke out in the command module and they couldn't get out.
Wow.
And, you know, so as a kid, so that would have been like February 1967, so I would have been six. So I probably didn't think much about that, only mm-hmm. in retrospect, like, is, you know, when they would talk about the Apollo 1 fire. And actually, I thought it was a Gemini fire. And my son Tim said, no, it was an Apollo 1 fire. So I remembered, because there were, you know, we started out with the Mercury program, the Gemini program, then it went into the Apollo program. But if you think about what these men were doing, I mean, so the Soviets put human beings into space. We put a dog and a monkey into space. First, I think we put a dog, maybe the Soviets put a dog, but I know we put a monkey in first to see what would happen, you know. But then, you know, we had John Glenn that orbited the Earth. So this man put himself literally sitting on top of an explosion
mm-hmm.
that's going to hurl him into orbit, into Earth's orbit. Never knowing what's going to happen, you know. And then I think Gus Grissom also orbited the Earth. He might have taken more or less orbits. I don't remember exactly. But then all of a sudden we're in. So after Apollo 1, so some people say, well, wait, we have Apollo 1, then we had Apollo 7. What happened to the other ones? They were unmanned. So they renamed and renumbered some of these missions. They did some unmanned things and did some testing because of the fire on Apollo 1. But the other thing was so now you have three men, and these three men are sitting in something that literally is the size of a closet on top of this explosion. And one of the reasons that they needed so many tests was they had to find a rocket powerful enough to launch, and then there would be multiple stages. So not only do you have this first explosion that you're riding on top of, but then you're going to have, you know, a second and a third stage explosion. This is just amazing that they could calculate these things and get the angles right and get the firing of these things right. And these were men just running the risk, never knowing. Well, one of the things I heard in this podcast I listened to that didn't hit me as a kid. So we've got our astronauts on the moon. Neil Armstrong is on the moon. And Buzz Aldrin's also on the moon with him. And they get back into the LEM, or the lunar module. They had one chance to fire the rockets to get that back up to the command module. And you're thinking, what? They had one shot to make that work. And the timing had to be just right, because the command module is orbiting the moon. So they have to launch off the surface of the moon. And then they could adjust it a little bit by firing some rockets to get it lined up to reconnect with something that's in an orbit around the moon. I mean, these are without calculators, in essence, okay? But they did it, because they had this calling to do something that had never been done before. You know, and one of the notes that I put in, it's a good thing I'm not going through my three pages of notes, isn't it? Because this would be like a 3-hour pod. I wish people could see the email that you sent me after I sent you the notes. Like, oh my, I've got way more than I need to here. But it was like one of those rabbit holes I found myself digging into. Every launch mission, every mission had a patch. And the patch was a logo for that mission. The Apollo 11 mission was the only one to that date, and I don't know, it might have been the only one ever, that didn't have the names of the astronauts on it. And the reason for that was that Neil Armstrong said, we're not going to put the astronauts' names on this, because it's a lot more than the three of us that are doing this mission. We're there because of the team. You know, and some of the notes that I sent you was actually the layout of mission control,
mm-hmm.
where there were four rows and who sat in what. And it was, people should Google that. Just do a search on, you know, what was mission control like? What was the layout like? Because it was fascinating. The other thing that I wanted to touch on was you know, we lost astronauts. We've had some fatalities, more than just the three that were killed on the launch pad for Apollo 1. And it's interesting because we lost two shuttles. We lost Challenger and Columbia. And interestingly enough, the only time the United States ever lost an astronaut, there were failures and quality problems that we knew about and ignored, which is tragic. But it's also a lesson for us. So Apollo 1, there were so many issues with that program that that Gus Grissom said he actually hung a lemon on a string over the hatch of the command module when they would go in and out to do testing, because there were so many things that were wrong with it. And sure enough, there was a short in a wire that caused the explosion and fire that killed the three of them. In the Challenger, we had an O-ring problem. In the solid rocket boosters, and I actually use this example in my supervisory leadership class to talk about, you know, when we ignore signs and when we shoot the messenger. But everyone knew that there were problems with the seals of the upper lower portions of the solid rocket boosters, and they were sealed with an O-ring. And when the temperature would drop below freezing, the O-rings got stiff. So to cover that issue, they put something pretty much like duct tape around that seam as a secondary seal. And the engineers at the company, I think it might have been Morton Thiokol that made the solid rocket boosters, every time there was a late night launch or an early morning launch at Cape Canaveral, would worry. They'd keep watching the thermometer because they knew if the temperatures dropped, there was a concern that there would be a blow-by. And that's exactly what happened. So we knew it, but we ignored it. And then the final fatalities that we had was with the Columbia. And what we knew was that there were foam insulating panels that were put on to the spacecraft. And this might have also been not on the spacecraft, but on some of the solid rockets. I'm not certain which, whether it was on the craft itself or its booster rockets. And they had to change the complexity or the makeup of the foam to keep some environmentalists happy, because a lot of this falls in the ocean. Pieces had been known to fall off during launch. They ignored it. And it was a piece of foam that fell off during launch that nicked the wing that caused it to blow up on reentry. So when we ignore quality failures, and when we shoot the messenger, when we don't focus on listening to people and getting all the right information, bad things happen. And in the case of the space program, the only time we ever lost astronauts, that's why. Because we ignored problems that were there. Other than that, stellar record. You know, the Soviets could never say that. Well, a lot of times they never said how many people they lost. It never hit the papers, so to speak, when they lost astronauts.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a really cool time. We do have 5 astronauts as of today that are still alive. Buzz Aldrin's still alive. Mike Collins, Dave Scott, Charlie Duke, and Jack Schmidt are still alive. And I'm hoping that people will start, you know, we'll have some more anniversaries of some things. I told you before, I'm going to make a note in my calendar, because Apollo 13, which was the mission that was aborted when we got our astronauts on the way to the moon, and then there was a failure and we had to figure out how to get them back. So I'm going to write about that, because that's an amazing story in itself. That's where we get the quote, failure's not an option. So I'm going to write about that. But there's a lot of these anniversaries coming up over the next couple years, and I think we really should pay attention to some of the amazing things that we've been able to do, and use it as an exciting challenge to, hey, what's out there? I mean, that was my big key, was the iterative process. I don't need to know everything. I just need to know the next step. And to challenge our listeners, what is your lunar landing that you need to be inspired to achieve? Because it's possible. You just have to commit like we did. And imagine the president of the United States standing up at Rice University and saying, we aren't doing it because it's easy. We're doing it because it's hard. And we will go to the moon within this decade. So that's it.
I have some researching to do, I think.
Yeah? Are the researching about what?
I just said it's fascinating, and I feel like there's so much I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because they didn't talk a lot about this when you were in school, probably.
No.
And I'm wondering why we didn't. Maybe we didn't because it was over. It was done.
Mm-hmm.
It was a given. I mean, I was really disappointed when they ended the shuttle program. I was really disappointed when you know, different administrations started defunding NASA. I'm super excited that, you know, what Engineer Tim said to me in the final text last night as we were texting back and forth. And again, he didn't know that I was writing about this. He said, I believe that we will go to the moon again. He said, I believe that I will see somebody drive a car on the moon again. But he said, it will be a private company that does it. And he's probably right. It'll be SpaceX.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things he said that he used to say, you know, Dad, there's this company that's going to launch a rocket and they're going to land that rocket vertically on the launch pad. And I just said, it's not possible. Well, then he showed me the video of SpaceX doing that. Because all the rockets that I knew of fell into the ocean. The command modules fell into the ocean. The space shuttle landed, but all of its rockets fell into the ocean. I thought, you can't land a rocket vertically. Well, SpaceX does. Literally on the launch pad where they want it to land. And they landed two rockets simultaneously on launch pads. So it's going to be cool. I think the future of space is going to be really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Tim's right. It's going to be private companies that are doing it. I do know NASA's got some other things that they've restarted. But we learn so much and we inspire so many when we do those challenges like that. You're going to ask me what I'm writing about next, aren't you?
Yes.
I have no clue. My point in this was to encourage people to, you know, look deep inside. Do you have the right stuff to do something with your genius and guts? You don't need to use slide rules anymore. Those can be put on shelves as archives of bygone tasks. They were a pain in the, almost like the drawing board. You know, literally I learned to draw with vellum sheets and pencils and straight edges and things. Any special plans for the weekend?
Well, we're hoping to go to the antique boat show in Skinny Atlas and hopefully see your boat there.
Please. I'm sure hoping, and I know our listeners, by the time they get this, it will be a historical event, but so the engine has not fired yet.
Okay.
But you know what? Talk about firing on the launch pad. So Thursday night is the next night. This is Wednesday morning. So tomorrow evening, my mechanic son, Jeremy, will be at my house and hopefully she will roar back to life.
All right.
We'll see. You'll know on the weekend.
Yeah, we'll know on Saturday.
If Tradition 2 is at her slip toward the end of the dock where they typically put me, it means that it ran. And if not, it's going to wait a week or two. Because even NASA delayed launches from time to time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, that would be my goal or my plans for the weekend would be the boat show. If
mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be there whether the boat runs or not.
Oh, good. Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, because I'm always, I just love the antique boat show in Skinny Atlas. Mm-hmm. A lot of good friends that I know and great boats. And yeah. So our next episode, we can talk about the boat show, I guess.
All right. Sounds good.
So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
This was The Next Page.